This is 69, the podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. 69 has been covering the digital signage industry since the dawn of man, first online and now as a podcast. This podcast gives me the time to really talk to people about technology and issues, get past the PR and jargon, and into what stuff actually means. I try to help listeners understand why they should care. The podcasts are free, and I try to get a new one out weekly, but I travel a lot, so sometimes I'll miss a week. The 69 podcast has been gratefully sponsored and supported since the start by Jeremy Gavin and the fine folks at ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. ScreenFeed makes beautiful-looking, totally automated content for signage and digital out-of-home networks. Check them out at ScreenFeed.com. There's very little that's simple about the display industry, whether it's on the consumer or commercial side. At first glance, it would seem to be all about the electronics, but a flat panel display in particular involves a lot of specialty glass and chemical compounds. What gets pulled together for a digital signage display may originate in multiple factories, from multiple companies, in multiple countries. A consulting firm called Display Supply Chain Consultants, or DSCC, is in the business of making sense of it all and relaying that expertise to the manufacturing ecosystem. DSCC does consulting, produces reports, and stages business conferences. I spoke with DSCC co-founder and president Bob O'Brien about emerging technology, as well as the impacts being seen by the COVID-19 outbreak. Time will tell, but for now, O'Brien says the impact on commercial display production and availability actually looks pretty negligible. It gets a little technical at times, but listen and learn. A lot of people probably don't know what DSCC is all about, so that should be a good place to start.
Sure. DSCC stands for Display Supply Chain Consultants, but we go by the initials as well because it's a lot easier to say. DSCC has been around for about 3.5 years, but the principals in the company have decades of experience in display market research.
So what would, if you were going to give the elevator pitch on what you guys all do, what is that?
So we are a consulting company for the display industry. We sell reports for subscription. We do one-off consulting projects. We do certain events, and we do custom consulting. That's our business model.
And would it be the consulting more on the it'd be less about what to use as opposed to who to use and what our supply chain is going to be like and what's the state of manufacturing?
The custom consulting projects we've done have been really sort of all over the map. Sometimes it's somebody wants to understand a technology better. We've done a special project on backlight technology, on certain capacity pictures, on a supply chain and recommending potential suppliers. It could be anything related to the display industry, from technology to market to business results. Any of those are fair game.
Okay, so would it, your typical customer, if there is such a thing, would it tend to be a manufacturer or an end user?
So not an end user in the sense of a consumer. Somebody buying a TV would not be that much interested in one of our reports. But our clients range from the material and equipment providers to the flat panel industry. So companies that supply things like glass and liquid crystal and lithographic equipment and so forth. To the panel makers themselves, the companies that make flat panel displays, some of them are our clients. To the brands that buy flat panel displays, and then also people in the financial community that follow this industry.
Okay, the display industry is a lot more complicated than probably even people within the digital signage ecosystem and the AV system ecosystem would understand. I've certainly learned over time that I made the assumption early on that if it's a Japanese company, well, the Japanese company is the manufacturer of all the components that make up this display. Same with a Korean company and so on. But it's kind of all over the place, isn't it, in terms of who's making what and who buys from who and so on?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this flat panel display industry is very international. You know, we have U.S. suppliers of critical components. Before DSCC, I worked for 10 years at Corning, leading their marketing intelligence effort.
Oh, okay.
Corning is the leading glass supplier into the display industry. They've got a little more than half the market for display glass, which is a fundamentally critical component. You start a flat panel display fab with glass. You have nothing if you don't have glass. Mm-hmm. And you know, there are a few other U.S. suppliers of components that are meaningful in the industry. 3M is another company with a substantial amount of supply, and there's in the OLED industry, Universal Display, DuPont, both significant suppliers into the industry. And then, you know, so a lot, some of those materials are made in the States, and then some of them are made in places in Asia. But a flat panel display, usually you start in the case of a liquid crystal display, you start with what we would refer to as an LC cell. That's C-E-L-L. Which is your liquid crystal sandwich, two pieces of glass with a liquid crystal inside. And the process for making that LC cell is very capital intensive and process intensive. And that happens in Japan, Korea, Taiwan, and China. Then you have subsequent steps that are more assembly steps, where you're adding optical layers of optical films or drive electronics or backlight or other components. And those assembly steps these days almost all happen in China, no matter who's the panel maker. So it might be a Korean or a Taiwanese panel maker, but they're doing the assembly step of the display in China. And often that assembly step is co-located with the end device. So you might do the assembly step of a liquid crystal smartphone panel, adding the backlight and the drive electronics in the same fab or adjacent to the same fab that you're building the smartphone, for example.
Okay, and by a fab you mean the plant, the manufacturing facility?
Yeah, the flat panel displays. I mean, we call them fabs. The technology is somewhat similar to semiconductor technology because, after all, you're making semiconductors in a thin film transistor LCD, TFT LCD, and the fabs are in gen sizes. We refer to them with the gen sizes in progressively larger sizes up to Gen 10. A Gen 10. LCD fab, and there are only LCD fabs in that size, starts with a glass substrate that's about 3 meters by 3.3 meters or 10 feet by 11 feet. So that's a really big rectangle of glass that you start with, and you run a bunch of photolithographic processes through and make a whole array of TFTs on that glass. And then ultimately you cut that glass down into size of smaller panels.
Mm-hmm. With what you're describing with Gen 10, is it therefore possible that we could see even larger LCD displays, or is that kind of capped out?
So I think that the industry is likely to be tapped out at Gen 10.5. With a Gen 10.5 substrate, the sweet spot of sizes for that generation is it can make 8 65-inch panels or 6 75-inch panels. So that's really the sweet spot where the economics work best. Mm-hmm. You can also make two 130-inch panels in one Gen 10.5 substrate. I would expect to see that at some juncture, but usually we refer to as two up is not so common in the industry. It does happen, and it might happen with Gen 10.5, but I would expect that to be pretty limited. So I think Gen 10.5 and 75-inch in terms of really high volume, really extremely cost-effective production is likely the end point for flat panel displays. I don't think, you know, the next size bigger would be Gen 12. I don't think Gen 12 will ever happen, partly because of the attractiveness and the performance of LED technology.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's going to be my next question. With mini LED and particularly micro LED, what I saw last week in Amsterdam suggested this stuff is getting really, really good. It looks awfully close to LCD in many respects. I think there are some big challenges still, particularly price. But yeah, you know, you would think over time that's going to be resolved or close to resolved.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, micro LED technology that I've seen really just beats the pants off of any other display technology out there. It's got all of the advantages of OLED in terms of black and color and visual performance. The brightness capability for micro LED is, you know, dramatically superior to OLED. So from a picture performer standpoint, absolutely, I agree. I don't think micro LED will ever be competitive with LCD or flat panel technology in the sizes where that flat panel technology is optimized. So up to 75 inch, I don't think micro LED is going to even be remotely competitive. The current cost of those products is something like two orders of magnitude higher. So you can get a 20% improvement per year for many, 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 many years, and you'd still be dramatically more expensive than LCD. But in the sizes bigger than 75 inch, I think micro LED is likely to be a very attractive technology going forward.
There are production issues, though, are there not? I mean, I did a podcast with Eric Verre from Yole, or however you say it, and you know, he talked about manufacturing yield and how long it would take to produce a micro LED, and how much risk you have in terms of that yield producing, you know, dead pixels, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're right to consult with Eric. He's definitely authority on micro LED. And yeah, indeed that the manufacturing issues and the complexity of building that is one of the inhibiting factors, which is one of the supporting reasons I would say. It's not going to get there for the TV sizes that we see today, you know. So up to 75 inch, you're just not going to do it with micro LED because the existing flat panel display technologies are so effective and so cost effective. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, if you want 150 inch display, you're not going to be able to do that with flat panel technology, and you're going to probably have the budget to be able to afford micro LED.
Is mini LED an option as well as a viewing surface, or because micro LED is getting so good, mini LED is going to be more of a kind of a backlight technology?
Yeah, I mean, here there's a little bit of a terminology difference, and there I think you've got to watch you've got to look closely at what people are describing.
Oh, I know.
Because for the most part, with micro LED, people are talking about direct view micro LED displays.
Yes.
And with mini LED, most of the discussion is around mini LED as a backlight for an LCD display. And there again, you have a lot of promise with that technology. And indeed, it could have very profound implications in the next few years as that technology develops. It is not a direct view technology then. It's forming a backlight. There is mini LED as a direct view technology, which is essentially the midpoint between a direct view micro LED and then a conventional LED. And if the
right
LEDs are maybe 100 or 200 microns, you would call it a mini LED. My understanding, the Layard planar display that they showed at CES and they showed at ISE, which they labeled micro LED, would probably more correctly be characterized as mini LED.
Which is what a lot of people say about Samsung's The Wall as well.
I would say the same. Yes. There again, I'm not sure that Samsung itself is using the term micro LED. Maybe they are, maybe they're not. But yeah, I agree that the Samsung The Wall would be better characterized as a mini LED direct view display technology.
But for the buyers and the end users and really the integrators, I'm sure they don't terribly care. They just care what it looks like and costs.
Yeah, that's a little bit of sort of inside baseball in the display industry. But then again, you've got the potential confusion for mini LED, the difference between mini LED as a direct view technology and mini LED as a backlight technology. Mm-hmm.
But as a backlight technology, if you were a commercial display guy, particularly on the LCD side, you should be quite intrigued by this, because what I've seen at Display Week and at Touch Taiwan as well is the ability to do local dimming, and you could really make a display look great.
Absolutely. I was particularly impressed by mini LED backlight products at the Consumer Electronics Show in January. TCL has a product that is out on the market that they claim, and I believe it's true that it's the world's first mini LED backlight product available on the market. It looked really good. It really does get a black level. I watched it for 5 minutes, and I've been looking at display quality for more than 30 years with a very careful eye. And I looked at it for 5 minutes, and there were many times they had it side by side with an OLED. And of course, in such a demonstration where you're not controlling it, you always wonder whether it's a fair comparison. But as I looked at that, I mean, the OLED did look quite good. There were many scenes, though, where the mini LED backlight product, just with the peak brightness and peak color temperature, really outperformed the OLED. In a 5 minute sequence, watching carefully, I did see about a fraction of a second where I would have said the OLED looked better. So in that sense, they weren't perfectly rigging the game. Overall, the OLED, the mini LED, the black levels really impressed me. And there were other products at the CES show floor that had the similar technology. And it is a real threat to OLED in the TV space.
Mm-hmm. The challenging part with OLED is that it doesn't generate that much light, correct? And that's why you don't get the color range?
Yeah, that's right. Getting the very high peak brightness is challenging for OLED.
Is that why there's a lot of work going on about applying quantum dots to OLED?
Well, so quantum dots, with quantum dots, Samsung in particular is working through a new technology for OLED that I believe they call quantum display. Within the industry, sometimes we refer to it as quantum dot OLED. Mm-hmm. Samsung has been using quantum dots in their LCD TVs for a few years now. Mm-hmm. Quantum dots are this material that has the capability to absorb light and absorb blue light and emit a very pure red color light or green color light in the case of a display technology. And by doing that, you can have very high efficiency with the quantum dots. What Samsung is pursuing in what I will call QD OLED technology is that they would make a blue OLED, so all of the OLED light would be emitted as blue light, And then they would put in front of that what they would refer to as a quantum dot color converter, which would be like a color filter in the sense that you've got, for every pixel, you've got a red and a green and a blue stripe. But in this case, rather than filtering the light, you'd be converting the blue light to red in the red subpixel and blue light to green in the green subpixel. No one has ever done a quantum dot color converter at scale and at volume before. So Samsung has quite some serious challenges up ahead if they're going to actually bring this to market, but they've committed some pretty serious resources to doing so.
So I shouldn't expect to see it at Infocom.
You know, every time there is a new conference, I keep looking for it. I was not able to see a demonstration at CES. I understand that there were some private demonstrations of QD OLED at CES. I wasn't able to see them. They are moving equipment into a fab to do this later this year. We expect them to be up and running in 2022. So eventually they'll be at conferences. And every time there's a new conference, I look for it. I wouldn't particularly expect it at Infocom, but I also wouldn't completely rule it out.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Gavin, CEO of ScreenFeed. Now, I'm not put off by the fact that you're not listening to this podcast to hear me. Just like audiences to any digital signage, you give your attention to content you find interesting or helpful. That's where my company ScreenFeed comes in. Our sole mission is to make your digital signage network more valuable by making content that is more valuable to your audience. If you'd like to drive more attention to your screens, visit ScreenFeed.com to explore the 75-plus content options we've created to do just that. And then give us a call. Now, back to the podcast.
LG has kind of pushed in many of their chips at the poker table on OLED, while the displays look amazing. I've always wondered how much of a commercial application and interest there actually is for OLED as something to be used for digital signage or for public information displays. What's your sense of the industry take on it?
Yeah, OLED and the technology that LG has built is it's really outstanding for a TV. It really gives by getting those very deep blacks. It makes your colors look appear richer. It's a terrific TV technology. Now, OLED as an emissive technology is going to face some of the same challenges that any emissive technology will face in a signage environment, and that's burn-in.
Yeah. So just like plasmas.
Yeah, you saw it with plasmas. You saw it with CRTs, for that matter. And that is a challenge. In that way, the natural advantages of OLED are least well applied in the application of signage. Because, one of the natural advantages of OLED is fast response time. Well, if you don't have fast moving video, if you have more static pictures or, slowly changing pictures, you're not leveraging that advantage, as well. Another of the principal advantages of OLED is that very, very deep black level. Mm-hmm. Which you really only achieve that benefit if you've got a very controlled light environment, really a dark environment. And a normal signage environment is not dark.
Is that the yardstick for really good professional display these days, that black level?
I would say, arguably it's the first yardstick. And I think the rise of OLED has made it so. There are three or four parameters in a display that are important, maybe more than that. Resolution is important. Brightness and peak brightness is important. Color and color range, color gamut, color volume is important. And black level is important to get contrast. And I think if a technology was seriously weak in any one of those, it would be essentially not marketable. But, you've got LCD, which is really very good at most of those and pretty good at the black level, against OLED, which is also very good at those and exceptionally good at black level.
Mm-hmm. I can't remember whether it was TCL or Hisense had this dual layer LCD that had kind of a grayscale layer behind the regular LCD layer.
That's right.
Is that something that will find its way into the commercial market as well?
I think so. I think it's got a good chance of going at the commercial market. Yes. So Hisense has a TV. I believe that they call it dual cell LCD. And there you are using two LC cells. And that's the cell I was referring to earlier, CELL. Mm-hmm. And the logic is if one LC cell layer can cut off 99.9% of the light, then two of them in series, you multiply that together and you get six nines, and then you can get effectively something like million to one contrast, which is indistinguishable
pretty darn good
from infinite contrast. Okay, so it is an attractive technology. It's likely and obviously it's much more expensive than LCD by itself. But I think it's quite competitive and from a cost standpoint to OLED. You would not have the burn-in problem. You would be able to get very good contrast. I think it is for a commercial application where you really want very good black level and you want to be still able to get sort of very high peak brightness and good color. And you're willing to pay a little more, I do think it's an attractive alternative.
Hmm. The name of your company has supply chain in it. I'd be silly if I didn't ask about what's going on in China right now and what are the ramifications of that short term and long term.
Yeah, that's almost a good part of every day these days. I'm looking at the news from China with the coronavirus. Now we are on February 19th. I want to date this because, every day the story can change a little bit. Mm-hmm. We're, now at the point where from the basic supply of displays, we think it's a pretty small impact. Most of the display fabs have been either running at a reduced rate or have restarted at a normal rate. There is a modest amount of display capacity in Wuhan, the epicenter of the virus, but most of display capacity is spread around other areas of China and Korea, Taiwan, and Japan.
And I think Wuhan is mostly smartphones as well, right?
So, and there's some display. So China Star has a low temperature polysilicon LCD fab in Wuhan, which is something like 10% of the capacity for that kind of high resolution smartphone panel. Mm-hmm. They have been running, but at a reduced rate. Again, from the basic flat panel standpoint, I think the level of disruption is not very much. The problem is down at the more assembly type stages. So after you make the LC cell and you've got to assemble the final parts of the display and then the end device, and this goes for smartphones, it goes for tablets and notebooks and monitors and TVs, those assembly fabs, which tend to be more in the coastal regions, but nowadays increasingly they could be all over the country, rely on a lot of labor and a lot of labor that may have trouble getting back to their work site because of the travel restrictions in China. So we've heard that in certain areas in smartphones and in notebooks and tablets that something like 30 or 35% lower capacity numbers for the month of February throughout China, and it will be lower in March and not quite clear how much lower. And that's really the question is, how soon do these workers get back to their work sites and able to work? And part of that's a function of the China government's central government and then local government travel restrictions and work site requirements.
If you have this reduced workforce and everything, does it impact commercial display any more so than TVs, because you just make a lot more TVs and commercial displays maybe aren't a priority? Or I guess commercial displays, you make more money out of them.
I think commercial displays, you make more money out of them. So I would think that the impact on the commercial display supply chain would be less so than in the more commoditized parts of the market.
I'm also curious, between the Trump tariffs and this, is this pushing out production or making companies think about production in new areas, like, let's say, Vietnam, other countries, or is it going to be in China for some time just because of the infrastructure?
Yeah, well, I mean, the overwhelming amount of the infrastructure is in China, but indeed, you know, I certainly believe that companies are going to be, you know, thinking seriously about at least setting up an alternate supply chain in another place, whether that be Southeast Asia or Eastern Europe or, you know, Mexico border zone or wherever. You know, between the trade war and this, it's just another reason to go in that direction.
It's got to be a messy year if you're doing planning in terms of commercial panel sales, and particularly if you're supposed to estimate your sales pipeline and everything.
Absolutely.
With your conferences that you do, particularly the ones around SID Display Week, what's the profile of the kind of person who should be going to that, and how technical do they need to be?
Sure. So this year, Display Week 2020 will be in San Francisco, June 8th through 12th. DSCC is organizing the business conference, which will be on Monday and Tuesday, June 8th and 9th. The business conference is, like the name implies, intended to really address all of the business issues in the display industry. So we'll have a lot of market research companies represented there and presenting their results. So DSCC is one of those, but also IHS Market, Omdia, Counterpoint, UBI Research, and others will be presenting material there. And then leading companies in the industry. So Corning will be presenting Applied Materials, Intel. We expect many of the display companies and then many of the end companies using the displays. The profile of attendees are executives in businesses, purchasing managers, marketing managers. You know, if you're in a brand and you're responsible for purchasing panels, this is the conference you want to be, because you're learning about what market developments are happening. You're learning about the competitive landscape of your suppliers and of your competitors.
So while it would be helpful to be an engineer, if you're an electronics engineer, if you're going into the SID show proper or some of their conferences, you can be a mere mortal and attend your stuff?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, this is a technical industry. Our industry is driven by technology developments. But the business conference is intended for a general business audience.
Okay. Bob, just one last question. If somebody wants to find out more about your company, where do they find you?
They can find us at displaysupplychain.com.
Clever. All right. Thank you so much for taking some time with me.
All right. You're very welcome, Dave.
That's it for this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed it and you learned a thing or two. If you're new to 16.9, it's a podcast that's been around since 2016. You can click around the site and find scores of conversations with smart industry folks. If you're new to digital signage, you need to be reading 16.9. That's at 16-9.net. You'll find thousands of posts by me and expert guest writers about this industry. I don't run a press release republishing mill. If something makes it on 16.9, that means it matters in some way to the business. Everything about 16.9 is free. Great sponsors make my work possible, and one of those is podcast sponsor ScreenFeed. Check them out at screenfeed.com. 16.9 is a product of Vertical Media Consulting Group, the massive media empire I run out of a spare room in my house, now located outside Halifax, Nova Scotia, on the east coast of Canada. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.